Welcome to AI, Government and the Future, a podcast by Corner Alliance. We explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, government and the future. We work with government to create results. We ignite your agency's mission by helping you to design and implement high impact and innovative federal programs in AI, broadband, cybersecurity, public safety and more. Being a government ally is at the core of all we do.
Welcome. My name is Max Romanek. I'll be the host for today. And I'm very excited to say that we are joined by Rodrigo Loureiro, a distinguished figure in the tech world, currently leading the helm as CEO of the Cyber Connective Corporation, where he spearheads the development of cutting-edge AI-powered cybersecurity solutions. With a background as an experienced CIO and CISO, Rodrigo has provided executive management services across various sectors, contributing to significant advancements in digital transformation and innovation. His leadership and visionary approach have been instrumental in driving forward-thinking strategies within the cybersecurity domain. Beyond his executive roles, Rodrigo is a celebrated author with his work Game On, Leaders Who Last, offering invaluable insights into adaptive leadership in the ever-changing technology landscape. His dedication to fostering secure digital ecosystems and his contributions to the field as a keynote speaker and thought leader make him a pivotal voice in understanding the intersection of AI, cybersecurity, and the future. Welcome to the podcast, Rodrigo.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We'll start off real basic here. In your role as CEO of the Cyber Connective Corporation, you're at the forefront of AI-powered cybersecurity solutions. Reflecting on your extensive experience, how have you seen the cybersecurity landscape evolve in recent years, especially with the advent of AI and machine learning technologies?
It's a very exciting time to be generally in technology and specifically on cybersecurity. I often equate the time that we are and the crossroads that we are to really to the advent of the internet. I think the impact of AI across technology and the corporations in general is as big as the internet was. And specifically in the realm of cybersecurity, you know, I had the very good fortune to join a $5 billion organization that was a private company, and it was preparing to go to an IPO. And I had the very fortunate luck, or bad luck, depends on your perspective, to join a company that was very large, very complex, but did not have an information security program to speak of. And I was put into a place, hey, you don't need to tell us that we don't have a security program. We know that. That's why you're here. And I built not just the complete information security program, but also the information security team. So I faced what every CISO and CIO faces when talking about security, which is the lack of skills, the lack of analysts, the lack of cybersecurity engineers. And that is one of the biggest obstacles to actually defend a corporation in today's cyber world. And for me, AI is very exciting because the promise of AI is to increase the productivity of any knowledge worker, but specifically in cybersecurity, for me, it's very exciting because it allows us to tenfold the productivity and effectiveness of a cybersecurity analyst. And that's one of the reasons why I'm very excited about AI and the ability for us to use AI in the defense, because our advisories are already using it.
That's really interesting, talking about skill gaps and labor shortages. What sort of areas specifically are you seeing AI being leveraged to train and augment the human workforce? And we are sort of particularly interested in government, but that also is going to be equally applicable, if not worse so, in the private sector, just in terms of its sheer scale. I mean, governments can be kind of small and the private sector's sky's the limit. But really, back to your point, workforce augmentation, how does that sort of stuff tend to work out?
Workforce augmentation, I would say that it's very important in the private sector. I would submit to you an expert in the government sector that is actually even more critical in the government sector. And typically, the gap between the private sector and the government sector is that in the private sector, typically, we have more resources to throw at problems, large organizations, and so on. And typically, in the government, you are more limited in terms of the budget and the resources that you can throw at the problem. So I think for me, it's even more applicable on the government sector, or even in general to organizations that have a limited budget, limited resources, because you don't have to go higher, you don't have to go spend too much money. You can just use AI to augment your existing workforce. And I'll tell you another, in my opinion, why it's so important in the government sector is because the private sector also has more flexible labor. So if you don't produce, if your skills are outdated, you can replace. In the government sector, it's not so easy to replace the workforce. And the AI can contribute to not just increase the productivity, but also to teach and to give new skills to your existing workforce. So for me, the applicability to government organizations is actually even more important.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. In addition to making a more efficient workforce, retraining, or just expanding the workforce, what other areas are you seeing AI being used in government?
We are bombarded every day with news about cyber attacks and breaches and so on and so forth. Invariably, what happens in an organization when you have a breach is that when you do the investigation of that breach, you determine that the breach, the attackers were in your network way before you actually found the breach. And typically, there was an indicator of compromise that was flashing somewhere in the organization and no one was paying attention. That's where AI can come in, because AI can process huge amounts of data, huge amounts of information 24/7, nonstop. So one of the applicabilities of AI is to exactly process and triage all of those indicators of compromise that in a typical large organization number in the hundreds of thousands or millions of indicators of compromise, and pre-process those, triage those, and send the ones that qualify and are more threatening then to the cybersecurity analysts. So it's a very, very limitless number of opportunities where we can use AI, and definitely outside of increasing the productivity, the effectiveness, training, reskilling, processing and identifying of patterns. I think that's where the applicability can be really leveraged.
That's interesting. So it sounds like, you know, if you can encounter a situation amongst multiple agencies that have varying levels of maturity, or even frankly, international governments who have varying levels of maturity in their cybersecurity practices, it sounds like AI is something that can be used to try to level the playing field a little bit. I mean, they're able to have more of the sort of cybersecurity posture that a more sophisticated actor might have, even though historically they've been sort of variant in their level of maturity.
Absolutely. And when I was brought into the organization I was discussing, when I came into this very large, complex organization, it was present in 27 different countries. And just like a government organization or a large corporation, you have varying degrees of cybersecurity maturity, and you have a very large number of cyber technologies being used across the organizations. So one of the secrets to the success of the program that I developed was exactly the standardization of all of those different cybersecurity technologies into a single pane of glass. And I did this based on a lot of labor, based on a lot of manual interventions. And when I left the organization and I started Cyber Connective Corporation, that's exactly what I wanted to do, was create a solution that actually allows a CISO to have a single pane of glass that allows him to essentially understand the different cybersecurity postures across the organization, regardless of the technology they are using. And that's very important. So by building and essentially creating a data store where all of that data is present, you can standardize and identify the common patterns across the organization. And it's on that structured data that then the AI can, large language models in general, Gen AIs in particular, can really do its magic of identifying those patterns. Because, you know, obviously, navigating this complex world of cybersecurity is very daunting. So the promise of AI and the promise of the Cyber Connective Corporation is really creating that unified platform that is going to ensure that your enterprise stays protected and stays compliant.
That's really, really interesting, especially from that perspective of trying to sort of level the playing field a bit in terms of the have versus the have nots. From that viewpoint, where do you see international frameworks and agreements governing the use of AI, particularly with cross-border stuff? But generally speaking, you know, how do you think those international agreements and frameworks could benefit this sort of environment?
Yeah, there's a very critical aspect of it because different organizations need to comply with the different regulatory mandates. And it is critical for every organization to essentially take all of their cybersecurity data and rate themselves against the appropriate regulatory standards. So I typically always start with a NIST security standard, but depending on your organization, it might be PCI, it might be HIPAA, it might be FISMA, it might be GDPR. There's a number of different security standards. And what the platform allows you to do and what is exactly map each one of the cybersecurity controls that you have against the relevant security standard. And that, for me, has been one of the limitations that CISOs and CIOs typically, and the mistake that they do is that they tend to be more speaking the technical terms and forgetting about the business aspect and how do you present a cybersecurity program to a business executives or to a board. And when you put it in terms of compliance to regulatory standards, now the CISO or the CIO will be easier to capture the attention of the CEO or the board because that is at top of their list of priorities.
So how do you think government policies should adapt with the rapid advancement of AI, especially as it has its impact on cybersecurity going forward?
Very, very good question. Because typically the reaction of CISOs and typically the reaction of government organizations is, don't use it. That's typically always the first thing. And I think with AI, you have to use it. And we had the internet coming in and we had the cloud platform coming in. And initially, the organizations and government will say, no, you cannot use the cloud. And big mistake. So what I always advise and I always alert governments and organizations to do is don't forbid, embrace. Because if you're a trekkie, you'll know that the resistance is futile. So don't resist AI, embrace AI. And another argument for embracing AI is that people will use it regardless, just people, regardless of what your policies use Gmail at work. Embrace it, regulate it, and make sure that your employees are using paid accounts versus free accounts. I barged in at 2 o'clock in our conversation and I eavesdrop on your conversation. That's exactly what they were talking about. You only realize the power of AI when you actually push your users to go from the free platforms to the paid accounts. And it's not just that you can better use AI with those paid accounts, but also you now have security protection, data protection, and confidentiality of all the dialogues and the data that you give to the AI. It's absolutely disastrous what's happening in a lot of organizations with employees using free AI accounts and giving the AI confidential information. So embrace, government, embrace AI. Create those free accounts and you'll see that the return is tenfold in terms of the investment that you do on AI.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you there. There's obviously the policy considerations and safeguards around privacy and security that are a big deal. Another common area that we hear some consternation is around ethics and the ethics of AI. Where do you land on that spectrum in terms of ethical considerations that need to be respected in the AI landscape?
Ethics is obviously a big concern. Plagiarism is a big concern. Recently, we had the Sora image processing model coming out from OpenAI, and there were a lot of concerns about the ethics of using. For me, it remains that AI is an ethical tool to use, but also we need to put pressure on the providers of AI so that they don't themselves create large language models based on proprietary information. You know, OpenAI and the New York Times are debating in court right now over the use of intellectual property from the New York Times. But just like the entire internet struggled at the beginning, these are the struggles of the infancy. But it's very important, and you should have ethical considerations. For instance, I've worked a long time in the educational sector, and I'm very happy to see that a lot of our higher education organizations are fully embracing AI with the benefits that it can bring to the classroom and not simply looking at it as a negative. So the reason that you need to embrace it is because then you can control the security aspect of it as well as the ethical aspect of it.
Do you find that there's more problems at a given phase in an AI's life cycle, data collection, data training versus use prompt engineering and deployment? Or is it sort of something you have to consider across the board?
You have to consider it across the board, but I will classify and not dodge your question. I do think that during the training phase of large language models is very critical, very, very important, because GenAIs right now, you know, we're still far away from true intelligence or consciousness, you know, depending on who you talk to, we could be a decade away or three decades away, but they are essentially a massive garbage in, garbage out type of platform. So if you feed the AI with garbage, they will output garbage. And there are many examples of AI projects over the years that had to be shut down because suddenly the AI was trained in bad data, in non-ethical data. AIs trained, for example, bad sites, fake news websites from the internet, conspiracy theories. And the thing is, and I always give this example, the large language model cannot distinguish between the article on the Harvard Business Review website and the comment section on that same article. So if we don't train the AI with the good materials, and if we point the AI to the comment section where any crazy conspiracy theories can be created, then the AI will be, and the large language model will be trained on those comments. So for me, across the board is always important, but for me, the critical phase is doing the training. Another example of that was visual recognition, where the AI wasn't able to recognize between different races, but could recognize a white face because it was trained just on using white people. So we need to have very good attention in terms of diversity and inclusion, and that is especially critical during the training phase.
And so have you seen any instances where bias and everything infects a model post-training phase, or is that really a training phase sort of problem that if you can control it at the training phase, it doesn't tend to invent the problems later on? There's not like an AI hallucination of racism or something like that. It has to be built in at the front end.
Then we get to the second part. The first part, the training, is incredibly important. But then what you generally mention as the prompt engineering, some of the bad examples of hallucinations happen when you lead the AI in a certain direction, and then you only show the last sentences. So, and this is the technique that is called as hacking or breaking free the AI. Jailbreaking the AI, which is using the prompt engineering. So when you train the large language model, you also have to put the appropriate guardrails such that the AI won't do those types of things, or for example, won't be teaching people how to build an atomic bomb, for example.
Would you say that there's a bit of trial and error in some of these areas in terms of the training? We don't know what we don't know until we've sort of stepped in it, so to speak.
This is the single most important factor of large language models. We, the technology people, we are very used to deterministic models, meaning for lots of decades, technologists, we always said, well, the computer is always right. If you don't get what you want, it's because you're doing something wrong. And then we go and fix the code, but the code does it always exactly the same thing. Not so with AIs, not so with large language models. Gen AI does have some random behavior and creative behavior. Those types of aspects can be controlled. Things like adjusting the temperature model can control the hallucinations that an AI can create. So right now, it is a balancing act between making the AI completely free and increasing the temperature, and then you can have those hallucinations, and then you control it by lowering the temperature, and then the AI becomes less useful. So at this moment, and based on the neural models and the machine learning models that are created in the AIs, we are exactly on a trial and error phase. Anybody that has programmed and worked with a large language model knows that sometimes you look at it and you go like, why is it not working? I've done the exact same thing and it's giving me a different result. So we're still on an experimental phase, but we are also on an exponential curve. So AI technology and the maturity of these models are accelerating incredibly fast. Just compare GPT-3 with GPT-4 and the quality of image renderers 2 years ago and today, and you can see that this technology is advancing by leaps and bounds.
Do you think that there's a realistic risk then of generating new vulnerabilities in an arena like that, things that we wouldn't see coming because of the way that the AI is operating?
Yes, absolutely. And I categorize it as an arms race. The attackers are using the AI, and the only way we have to combat it is for us ourselves to use AI. So if we don't use the AI on the defense side, we will be overrun by AI on the offensive side. So we absolutely have to. Although it is risky, it's an arms race, and we can't continue not using AI in our defenses.
Is there a specific area within AI development that you think that kind of poses a greater risk from a cybersecurity perspective?
I don't think that there is a specific area that poses a greater risk than others, but you need to take cybersecurity into consideration all throughout the process. And, you know, we always say in terms of cybersecurity that you need to design cybersecurity from the beginning. You need to incorporate security on the design phase because it's harder and more costlier to do it in a later phase. Unfortunately, some of the things that we are observing is that cybersecurity has been an afterthought for some of the large language model vendors and for some of the organizations. So they're correcting, they're realigning and readjusting, but it's something that we have to be double careful about, ensuring that we consider the cybersecurity aspect of it. Because as I said, AI is a multiplying factor on the defense, on the productivity, but also on the offense, on the attacker side.
I imagine legacy systems that you see with a lot of government agencies and large businesses, I'm sure that they're particularly susceptible to stuff like this, given that these weren't considerations when those systems were built and developed, and now they're still part of some mission-critical business aspect, but they have to be considered in the threat fabric. Is AI helpful or harmful with those sort of legacy systems trying to integrate your security posture?
I don't like to qualify something like AI as beneficial or harmful. For me, AI is a tool. AI is a technology. So like most things, and I'll use the cliche, can be used for good and or for evil. And what we need to realize is that it will be used for evil. I can guarantee you that, because there's profit to be made, there's competitive advantages to be made. And as long as there is a profit or there is a competitive advantage to be made, someone will use it to gain an illegal advantage. So the only way we can do that is by protecting ourselves and using it on the defensive side. In terms of the legacy systems, we just need to realize that we can't continue defending the legacy systems and our environment the same way we did before the advent of AI.
So I have clients in my portfolio that are particularly interested in like real-time identification and neutralization of cybersecurity threats. Can you discuss any sort of breakthroughs or innovations that your team has seen in this area that might be of particular importance to a governmental agency?
Yes, the real-time response to threats is actually something that is enabled and unlocked by AI. Because, you know, we go back to the beginning of our conversation, we humans, we like to sleep, we like to take time off, We like to doom scroll on our iPhones, but the AI doesn't do that. So we have a unique opportunity to create defensive systems that constantly monitor and continuously monitor the threats and the risks in our environments. And that's exactly what I've been doing with my platform, to exactly take all the work that I did when I was a CISO, that I did a lot manual intensive labor, but sometimes what would happen is that I would find things a week later or a day later. But when I apply that to real-time interfaces, real-time feeding of the data to a large language model, we can get an immediate qualified alert for a certain incident. Because the problem is always the cry wolf problem, right? Yeah, that machine always launches that alert on Fridays. It's nothing until it's something. So AIs can help us in doing that. And that's exactly where we are devoting a lot of our time, is really making sure that we can have real-time alert systems. And we've had real-time alert systems for a long time now. But now we can have intelligent real-time alert systems, so that when we receive the data, when we receive the incident, we can immediately qualify this is a serious event that somebody needs to pay attention to. And this is just the first phase, because the other phase is to have not just the intelligence detection of the threats, but also the intelligence reaction and mitigation of the threat. And this is why this field is so incredibly important, because the holy grail here is the true cybersecurity autonomous system. And that's the direction that we are heading to.
Is that something that you see as having a large amount of like government-sponsored research, or is it really like a public-private partnership kind of model that you would think would help drive the progress towards that forward?
I think that government has a role to play. I may differ for some of my colleagues in this space who would like to see everything done just by private enterprises. I do think that there is a role for government to play in terms of funding organizations, funding research. The internet came out of a government program. So many brilliant technologies came out of the government funding. So I do think that government has a role to play. It can't be the government alone and just by itself, and it won't be, because one of the things that is propelling AI right now is obviously the potential for incredible economical benefits. Stock prices, NVIDIA stock prices, anybody that has looked at the stock market said, why didn't I buy NVIDIA 2 years ago? So there are incredible economical opportunities to be made in the field of AI, and definitely the private sector is attentive to that. But so that we don't sacrifice everything in the altar of economical benefits and financial benefits, I do think that there is a role to be played by the government to funding ethical research and to make sure that, you know, disadvantaged groups, and that we ensure that there is diversity and inclusion in the research that is being made, because diversity and inclusion is not a priority for the private sector.
Right. That does make a fair bit of sense. With the dual use sort of nature of AI, how do cybersecurity professionals stay ahead of AI enhanced cyber threats without stifling innovation or privacy? It seems like a very, very tricky balancing act. And then when you include government and private sector interface as well, every opportunity for enhancement also creates an opportunity to punch another hole in that fabric.
It's a dilemma and a problem as old as technology. And I think that all organizations are very conscious that, and this is part of my speech to boards, right? Investment in technology, investment on AI, it's not one and done. It requires continuous investment, continuous nurturing of those technologies. Because one aspect of the technology change is that the rate of change of technology is also accelerating. So if you had to be on top of the technology change before, with AI, you have to be even more on top of those change, because the rate of change, the rate of innovation in technology, in Gen AI technologies, is superior to any other technology. And a classical example is the number of days that took OpenAI to reach 100 million subscribers, which was measured in months versus years for Facebook, for example. So, and we can see every month, every quarter, we see changes and all of these AI tools improving. So it cannot be underestimated, the need to keep on top of adopting technologies. And that is a threat to in the government, because typically the government is always slow to adopt and slow to innovate. And the challenge that it brings is that government organizations cannot use the same old slow rate of adoption of technologies.
That seems to be particularly critical given the pace that you just nicely laid out around that area. I admire your passion for leadership and education from your book. And so I'm curious, just putting that all together, do you see a role for AI in cybersecurity education and awareness for those programs? Because I mean, we've got to do something to change the script on how especially government has been operating. You know, if we're going to make them faster to respond, we have to make them faster to respond. It's not going to come just internally. Do you think AI can help kick them in the butt, so to speak?
I think so, because AI makes it so obvious, even to government and government officials, the rate of change. It is exciting. I will say that the biggest ability of AI and the AI models is to be used, appreciated, and taken advantage of. It lowered the technology threshold upon you can use an AI tool. And I think that is the exciting part, is that you don't even need to know how to speak English, because the AI will speak whatever language you are. But you don't need technical skill. You just need to be able to converse and to talk. And all of us humans know how to converse and to talk. If you can do that, you can work with AI. And that, for me, from an educational perspective, that's the amazing thing about AI, is that everybody can use it and everybody can get excited about, which has not always been the case, where technology sometimes is too dense, too technical, and then non-technical people don't get excited about it. I have yet to meet a person that is not excited about the AI once they use it.
That's really great. I agree with you. It's a much more accessible technology than some of the things that we've seen in the past, especially like in a cybersecurity posture, where at least the general public views that as is highly technical, highly complex. And so to provide an access to that, I think is a really, really sort of nice, innovative way to approach it. If you were able to create some initiatives or programs that you think would really foster that, can you, in broad strokes, sort of describe what would that look like if you were going to be trying to educate government workers at, say, Bureau of Land Management on what their use of AI should look like and whether or not they sort of start deploying that in their day-to-day activities?
I would simply make it that every government worker should be given an AI account to use on their job. And I would actually stay away from mandating how to use them, how to use AI. I would just give the AI tool, the government worker or any worker for that matter, to be able to use it and let them come up with a way to solve the problems that they face on a daily basis. Sometimes a big problem is that we people in technology are not doing the work. So sometimes we don't even know the challenge that the worker is actually facing. And the beauty of AI is that we can give them the tool and they can, just by talking to the AI, figure out how to solve the problems. We technologists, we don't need to tell them how to solve the problem. They can figure it out themselves. So if I could snap my fingers, I would just give access to all employees to an AI tool and allow them to explore by themselves the wonderful world that Gen AI is.
Yeah, there is something very attractive to that notion of we've put it inside the walled garden and your directive is go play. I think that there'd be a lot of people that would find that to be a very easy policy directive to comply with.
Unleash the inner child of every employee.
One final question for you here before we wrap up. In general, with the horizon of, with tech being what it is, the fast pace of all of these things, what do you envision as the ultimate future of AI in cybersecurity within government sectors? Where do you think we're going to be 10 years from now? What are we staring down the pike of?
I'm very bullish about AI. I think we may be at the precipice of, you know, what's called the singularity, which is the melding of human and machine. We may be closer to that than we anticipate. I think that I'm optimistic, very optimistic about where we are and the benefit that AI is going to bring to our society. We just need to accept the challenge and give access to AI to all levels of the population and all levels of the enterprise. But it can really unlock that ability for us to free ourselves from some of the most menial tasks and really unleash the creativity of the human being. So I'm very bullish and very excited about, I don't know if it will come in 10 years or 15, but I think we're very, very close to that day.
Well, Rodrigo, thank you so much for the benefit of your time and your wisdom today. It's been a wonderful conversation. And to our listening audience, we'll see you next time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
AI, Government and the Future is brought to you by Corner Alliance. To find out more about Corner Alliance and how we work with government to create results, visit our website at corneralliance.com and then make sure to search for AI Government Future in Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Corner Alliance, thanks for listening.